Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Indie Authors Roundtable. I'm your host, R.L. Jackson, author of The Crashing Series, available on Nook, Kobo, and Amazon, and editor-in-chief of Indie Authors Monthly magazine on Magster. I'm also a host of Navigating Indie World radio show. Welcome.
Hi, I'm Carol P. Roman, author of over 50 books and host of Navigating Indie World blog show, and Let's Say Hello to Our Neighbors. I'm also creative director of Indie Authors Monthly magazine.
Hi, I'm Anita Dickinson, author of the Tracker Crime series, as well as the fiction editor, columnist, and book reviewer for Indie Authors Monthly magazine.
Laura Lovett is a psychologist and entrepreneur. An accomplished author in the academic and business world, she pursued her love of creative writing to pen her first novel, Losing Cadence. Laura lives in Calgary, Alberta, with her husband and three children. In her spare time, she loves playing squash and spending time at the family cabin in Montana.
Laura, this is Anita. And first of all, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here, Anita.
One of the things that I really liked when I read your book was your title. I'm into titles. And I thought this one was really very, very well done. Losing Cadence. It was such a clever play on words, not only for the name of your main character, but also the tie-in to her musical background. So I thought that was very well done. The other thing that I really found intriguing was how you developed the plot into such a chilling storyline. And one of your reviews from Brandon R. on Amazon, he stated it very well. Lovett does a great job of weaving a story that people might only consider their worst nightmare. So how did you come up with this plot?
Oh, wow. That's a big question, Anita. But I really appreciate your compliment on my title. And I always loved the name Cadence. I thought it was just a beautiful name, and it's a musical term, and I was a musician in my past, and it's a cycling term as well. And I just love how that title came together. And I ended up naming my daughter Cadence just because I love the name so much, and it was a pretty unique name. But now it's becoming a little more common, funny enough. Well, I don't know if you know any Cadences out there. No,
nope,
I don't.
Matter of fact, this is the first time.
How did I come up with the plot? I just was really intrigued by the idea of what would it be like if you were abducted by someone who loved you and who had a lot of money and resources to build the perfect dream life for you, but it was your worst nightmare. So I thought it was a unique type of plot. People have described it as sleeping with the enemy meets Gone Girl. So I like that kind of description. It really is fast-paced, and the plot just came to me. It developed as it went along. It wasn't a pre-planned plot.
No outline then.
No, I do too many outlines in my business life. I needed to just be a free-flowing writer.
So the book sort of grew organically, is what you're saying?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
That was the way I had done it, and it seemed to work for the first book as well as the sequel, Finding Sophie.
Mm-hmm. Well, you have a background in therapy, we've read. How useful was it in creating Richard's obsession?
So the background in psychology, I mean, I've definitely done therapy in my past, but I do a lot of workplace and career psychology, which is called industrial organizational. But I've really learned a lot about human behavior and describing human behavior. So I'm not a psychiatrist, so someone as extreme in his illness as Richard would not be someone that I would ever deal with in my field of psychology. But I just have seen enough, read enough, seen enough movies, been exposed to enough situations outside of my work world by being in the field of psychology that I was able to describe this character and what might be going on in his own mind, especially in book two, the backstory. I felt that my career in psychology helped me write a plausible backstory.
So you would consider him a functioning psychopath?
Well, I don't really give him one set diagnosis, but I actually like the way you said that. That's Anita?
No, this is
I like Carol.
Carol.
Carol, sorry. So, Carol, I like the way you said, functioning psychopath, sociopath, narcissist, whatever types of disorders. I think the key word there is he's able to function and he's able to manipulate and convince others around him to follow him and to support his cause, which is, having his wife there against her will.
Well, narcissism is the big, the functioning narcissist, so the big trending of the month of the year. We're reading a lot about narcissism and those kind of people with narcissism and how they manipulate other people. So it was very current with what's going on today. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it's big topic for sure, and an interesting one that not all narcissists are cut out of the same cloth. There's some that can actually do positive things in the world and some that do a lot of negative things. And I'd say Richard, his perception is he's doing great things. He's, he loves his woman and he wants to create a beautiful life, and he just doesn't understand why she wouldn't feel the same.
Yeah, he kind of loves her to death, right?
Exactly.
So, hi, Laura. This is RL. Losing Cadence reads very much like a movie. Who would you see playing the different roles?
Oh, well, there's been quite a few. I've done contests on my author, Laura Lovett, Facebook for that exact reason. And Bryce Dallas Howard is an actress that I think would be an ideal Cadence. And she has that red hair and the beautiful blue eyes. And do you know who she is? Does anyone know?
She's Ron Howard's kid, and she was in. She's been in a few M. Night Shyamalan movies, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yes, okay. I know them by face. I don't necessarily know them all by their names, but yeah, I think she's a gorgeous girl.
Yeah, she was in, what was that movie? I can't even think of the movie, but I see her right before my eyes. She's a beautiful girl.
Yeah, she is gorgeous. And then for the man, there's been a few that have gone through my mind and through these contests. I have a film producer, actually. Her name is Conroy Cantor, and she is shopping the books for film rights or a studio, and I'm really excited about that because she's an amazing film producer, and she really sees these as belonging on the screen. So she thinks Armie Hammer would be a really good Richard.
Yeah, he actually would be perfect, yeah.
You think so?
Well, he's a perfect, looks. He's just so stunning. And he played twins. What movie did he play twins in? I think it was the Facebook movie. Do you remember the Facebook? He played
the Social
twins.
Network?
That's the movie, right? He played the twins. He's a terrific actor. And
thank you for that endorsement. And then I would say Chris Pine also came up in
Chris
our contest.
Ooh,
Captain
yeah.
Kirk. Yeah. It's fun doing these contests, right? But the winner of our last one was actually not Armie Hammer or Chris Pine. It was Billy Magnuson. So
interesting.
Yeah, he's another one. He looks kind of innocent, but a little bit on the creepy side. I mean, all of them are gorgeous men. I'm looking at them right now.
Yeah,
they're all really gorgeous. It's fun doing these posts, I think. So our next one's going to be for Who Should Act Christian. So that's a fun one, too. So keep an eye out for that.
Okay.
Definitely. Congrats.
Thank you.
This is Anita again. Are there any other books or authors that may have influenced your style over the years, and if so, what are they?
Oh my, that's a good question. So I really I haven't read a whole bunch of Stephen King, but from what I've read, I mean, the book The Stand I really liked. I like that, that writing style, so I definitely hope that I've been influenced a little bit by Stephen King. And then I've read some other thrillers, like the Girl with the Dragon Tattoo series. That was another one that I really quite liked. in terms of Misery. Sorry, Misery was another Stephen King one about an abduction, and that one really moved me at a young age. I watched that when I was a teenager, actually. It was a long time ago.
Yeah, I love Misery.
Yeah, it's just so interesting. And then, I mean, Gone Girl, but the funny thing is I had written Losing Cadence before I ever read Gone Girl, because it took me years to write Losing Cadence because I was so busy doing my doctorate, having kids, starting my business. It just took a long time. And, yeah, and then when I read Gone Girl, I thought, oh, it kind of reminds me in certain ways of my book, but yet it's way different. And my editor said, yeah, your book's way different. I like it better than Gone Girl is what she said.
Wow, that's a lot.
Yeah, and she likes it better, and she thought there was a real opportunity to get it out there into the world, and she's the one I can credit to help and convince me to do that as an indie author, right? Because it's taking a leap to do something and put yourself out there, and you wonder when an agent doesn't pick you up, how come, you know, is it something with my book, or is it the true issue of it's very difficult to get an agent? And I'm continuing to try to do so, but I think the indie world has been a really great experience for me so far.
Awesome. That's great to hear, because, you know, you hear a lot of people say, you know, they have thoughts and ideas of maybe eventually going the traditional route, but you rarely hear people, you know, really, you know, talking about being an indie and loving being an indie a lot of times. So really like to hear that from, you know, somebody that's on the rise. My next question is, what was the hardest part for you to write in this book?
In the first book, Losing Cadence? Because I can definitely tell you the second book what was hard. But the first book was probably how to end it. And whether to have a cliffhanger type of ending and whether to have her keep the baby or not. That was a big one, and I've gotten some critique on that, you know, on she shouldn't have had that baby, right, given the circumstance. But you know what? Like, I just think of, you know, what I may have done and what in a situation like that, you know, I think it's plausible, and I think the baby was her decision, and it allowed me to end on a cliffhanger and continue with book two. So that was the right decision, wasn't it?
It certainly gave you an in for the second book. I mean, you know when you finish it that the story's not finished.
Exactly. Yeah. And it was hard because I was trying to finish the book. I said, I'm going to get this done once and for all. So I was actually pregnant with my daughter, Cadence, and it was a week before she was born that I was in bed finishing that book.
Wow.
I know. Because I said, when I have three kids, I'm not going to get to this anytime soon. So that's what happened.
If I had to describe your characters and your plot with one word, it would be intricate. So how much research did you have to do? You mentioned that it took you, you know, I guess several years maybe to write this book. So how did you handle doing the research, and where did you get the information to build these characters and this plot and weave all of this together the way that you did?
That's actually a really good question. I mean, I definitely had to do some research, especially about geographic locations and ways of communicating, like satellite phone and whatnot when you're in remote areas. And I would say my editor added a lot of value too. So my editor, Cheryl Canna, what she would do is point out certain things and say, especially because I wrote the book over an 8-year period, there was things that were outdated and we had to say, okay, we need to just make sure that this all makes sense. And she would point out these things to me and we would work collaboratively. I think a good content editor is like that. They help make the story plausible and they help you do more research where you need to. So yeah, I would say that. And I'd say the second book, Finding Sophie, took a lot more research than the first one because it involved things like the Navy and the naval station and a super yacht or a mega yacht, which I had to actually talk to people in the mega yacht industry because it's not like a normal boat, right? It can only dock in certain places. It can only go a certain speed. There's just how many staff do you need to run a mega yacht, right? I had no idea, but I had to learn that so it was plausible.
You pretty much answered the question about Gone Girl, but we were talking about the comparisons. What are the major differences between you and Gillian Flynn's book? You know, and of course, Gillian Flynn, as everybody knows, she's doing Sharp Objects now, so people are really getting familiar with her. What do you think is the difference between your book and her book?
Well, that's a bit of a challenging question because I haven't read that book in it's been a few years now since I read it. And to be honest, I haven't even seen the film. I'd like to see the movie. The difference in writing style. I think she's very fast-paced and, you know, keeps you page-turning. You don't want to put it down. And I think mine's similar to that. I've been told it's kept people up late at night to finish it. And I don't know, like, I would hope, and I don't know if I'm saying this or not, but I'd say my protagonist, Cadence, is probably a little more likable than her protagonist.
Well, that's a big difference. I mean, her protagonist is basically unlikable. The wife, I don't remember her name. I read the book about 4 years ago, three years ago.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
But she was unlikable. In fact, that was something that I wrote in my review, that everybody in the book is pretty much unlikable.
Yeah, you don't really care.
That's crazy.
Yeah, when I was reading the book, there was not a character other than his sister that I could say I was rooting for any of these characters. They were all despicable people, and it was really funny. Your book reads more, Cadence is likable and Christian, of course, is likable. So I think that would be the biggest difference.
Oh, well, I appreciate that. I take that as a compliment. And the other thing about Gone Girl is the ending left the reader very unsatisfied, I think. Right?
When I finished the book, I remember thinking, this is it, really? You know, this is...
Yeah.
And it was actually, it ended for me as more of a horror story because he was, I don't want to give it away, but for me, it felt as though it was more of a horror story, the way the things worked out for him. There was not a pat in ending.
Exactly. Whereas my ending, although it was a cliffhanger and although it might have been somewhat frustrating to know that Richard was still alive, it made the reader look forward to book two, which is precisely why I wrote book two, is that a lot of people wanted to see what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And my editor said, Laura, you have to get it done in 18 months. Otherwise, people forget book one. So I sought out to do that and somehow fit that into my life. And that's why I talk a lot about none of us have a lot of extra time. We have to make time to do things that we're passionate about. And I know from you and Anita and Carol and Arl, all of you love writing, and you somehow fit it in amongst doing your shows and your blogs and your magazines and all these things. Like, it's just time is finite, right? And you got to chisel it out.
Well, let me give you a clue of what will help you down the line when you retire. I'm retired, so I have a lot more time now to fill than having a family. It's something definitely to look forward to. Not many things in retirement are, but that's definitely one. You do have time to do and pursue some of these things that was always difficult when you were holding down a job and taking care of kids and a family and whatnot. So something
well,
for
that's
you to
good
look
to know,
forward to.
But do you sometimes feel like having too much time can also be a challenge? Because what can happen is you can procrastinate. I've seen that happen with people and clients and stuff that I work with, that too much time can be just as much of a challenge as not enough time sometimes.
Yeah, I could see that, how that could be. I think it would really depend upon your personality in this case. And,
I think we live
in a
time period of too much choice. And that's what happens to people. They don't know where. There's just so much to choose from that they basically flounder. Should they do? And even with with being an indie author, we, you know, writing the book is just the smallest part. You finish the book and then the real job is really pushing the book out there. I can speak for myself. I think RL and Anita too, saying that selling our books has taken over most of our time. Would you agree with me, girls?
Oh, Lord, yes.
Definitely. Definitely.
Yeah.
A lot of work.
Yeah, for sure. People think that when they write a book, that's the most work. Marketing's a whole new world, isn't it?
I liken it to a relationship. Writing is the dating side, the fun part. Publishing is the marriage side, and that's when all the hard work starts.
That's really good, Anita.
I love that. That's a great analogy.
Anita, you should write a story on it. That's really good.
Yeah, it is. So, but, all right. Well, from your standpoint of trying to get your book published, what was the hardest obstacle for you to overcome?
Just to try not to take it personally when the approach of sending queries to agents wasn't working, right? And just trying not to let other people's decision, because their decision can be based on so many factors, right? They don't know me. I'm just a faceless person to them. And they have a huge amount of queries going on. And I just think not taking that personally, though, as a critique against your writing or your story, because a lot of them probably spend very little time because they get so many queries. And what I've learned is I think the better way is to go to the writers' conferences and be across from agents face-to-face and pitch your story. I think that's more fruitful and a better use of time than sending out a lot of email queries. That's just my perspective. I don't know if you guys would agree.
I had an agent once. I had an agent 35 years ago, and I got the agent through a client, introduced me to an agent, and he took on a book and he tried to sell it for a year, and it was like really one of the best years of my life. It was a romance. When Kathleen Woodowis was writing romances back then, Rebecca Brandywine, it was like an era of romances, these florid kind of action pirates, that kind of thing. And it was really a lot of fun, and we didn't sell the book, but I had a great time, and it validated that for me that an agent took me on. But when Michael, my son, was looking for an agent, basically his queries came back unopened, and he only got an agent by a fluke that he found an attorney who then insisted that he get an agent who called a friend who was an agent who took him on. So I think that it's pretty hard to get an agent. To go the non-indie route, you still have to be discovered. In the same way that if you're an indie, you still have to be discovered. If you want your book to turn into a movie, which seems to be the biggest route to getting known, is that once it gets into a movie, and certainly from what I hear, they're desperate for material in Hollywood between Amazon and Netflix. The streaming is there's so many places that just want material. They're looking for it. You know, the next step really would be to find a film agent to get to promote your work or to sell your work to a studio. And I think the easiest way to do that is to get your work into those conventions, like we said. Miami, the book fair is coming up. That's going to be filled with agents. So really, that's the way to go. Unless you just want to write because you like to torture yourself. Right, RL? No, do we like to torture ourselves?
Yeah.
Most definitely. So what's next for you, Laura?
Well, I am busy trying to do exactly what you're saying. I'm in a marriage. I'm in a marriage, which means marketing my books, doing a lot of interviews, radio. I've been on television, news, all kinds of things. And I think my platform as a psychologist and talking about finding time for your passions, also talking about emotional health and controlling relationships. I mean, that's a big theme in my books. So all of that is taking on a life of its own. And then having signed with the film producer, Conroy Cantor, that's a big focus for me right now, is supporting the work that she's doing to try and make the film dream a reality. So that's the next year, what's happening for me. Definitely not writing another book right now. Don't have time at the moment, but ideas are percolating for another book. It's just a matter of when. But the ideas don't stop flowing, which I guess is a good thing. Yeah. Yeah. And I'm reading as much as I can from authors like you three and whoever I come across. You know, I meet some great people like KJ Howe, who wrote The Freedom Broker and Skyjack and runs Thriller Fest in New York City, who's become a friend, and she's flying out here next week. We're doing a big event called Not on My Watch, Avoiding Abductions at Home and Abroad, and raising a lot of money towards trafficking prevention, sex trafficking prevention. So she'll be there, and then I have Conroy Cantor on the panel talking about her film Trafficked, which stars Ashley Judd and came out in the fall and is getting a worldwide movement around this horrible issue of trafficking.
Wow, that's amazing work. Amazing.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm just so honored to be able to be a part of it.
Well, what about some signing events? Do you have those coming up?
Signing events?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, I've done a lot of signings. Right now with this Not on My Watch event, there's 150 people coming, and we've raised a lot of money for the charity already. And so my role is moderating a panel, and just, I mean, it's been a big undertaking with that event. So I haven't done signings lately, but I will do signings again. I try to do at least one every couple of months. But yeah, so it's fun. I'd say signings can be tiring at times, but they can also be really rewarding. I mean, even if you meet one or two super interesting people, it was worth the whole signing, you know?
Well, that's all you need, is one person to buy your book, and then they tell another person, and that's how it, you know, they write it on Facebook or whatever, and that's how it is for us indies. It's a grassroots movement. Can you provide links to your book?
So definitely authorlauralovett.com is my website, and it has all the links. So it's on Amazon and Kindle, obviously, Kobo, Indigo, Barnes Noble, iTunes. It's on all of the ones that you'd expect. And then it's at certain stores, more so in Canada than the U.S., which is another reason an agent would come in handy, just to help me get into the U.S. stores. It's hard to do that as an independent author in Canada, just from what I've experienced in the last couple of years.
True.
Yeah, we have a number of Canadian. Yeah, I just wanted to say that we have a number of Canadian and a lot of writers from the UK, and they often talk about that on our forums on Goodreads, and you should come on to Goodreads and get on the forums. You'll pick up a lot of information that way. I'm sorry, Ariel, go ahead.
Okay. We just want to thank you so much for joining us today, Laura. It's been amazing. We cannot wait to see, you know, what you have coming up next. Remember, listeners, if you want to stay up to date with Laura and find out more information about Not on My Watch and her book, please visit her at www.lauralovett.com. This is R.L.
Actually,
Jackson.
Sorry, it's author, authorlauralovett.com.
Author lauralovett.com. This is R.L. Jackson saying so long for Carol P. Roman and Anita Dickerson. We'd like to thank our guests again, Laura Lovett, and all of our listeners. We hope you'll tune in for another Indie Authors Roundtable, where we bring the latest in books, authors, and indie publishing to the table. Don't forget to catch the latest issue of Indie Authors Monthly, available on Magster. Have an amazing day, and see you next time.